Okay. We have the tremendous privilege to learn Arvei Tzachim together. So we got a chance to see the Mishnah. So what does the Mishnah tell us? The Mishnah tells us a number of dinim put together, which are connected because they all are relevant to 15th of Nisan, or maybe more to the point, though they actually, some of them start on the 14th of Nisan. So what are the three dinim, at least, that come out of the Mishnah? So first we have the halacha of, that we'll be focusing on today, of a prohibition on some level of eating on Erev Pesach. The Erev Pesachim or Arvei Pesachim, depending on the Girsos, but we know that we're talking about the 14th of Nisan. Samach l'mincha, lo yochal adam ad shetechshach, afilu anish v'yisrael, lo yochal ad shiyotev. Right, so we have three dinim that we can't eat on Erev Pesach, at least too much. The parameters have not yet been determined, but there's some issue with eating on Erev Pesach. And there is a din of Eseba. And a din of Dalet Kosos, which is introduced through a particular detail, right, that we should not stay away from Dalet Kosos, we should not abstain from the Dalet Kosos, even if it's financially prohibited, and we would have to turn to Tzedakah in order to make sure to allow that to happen, which is itself a fascinating halacha. It's not going to be our subject so much for today. We'll get to that guy well soon. But those three halachos right there in the Mishnah. So is there a theme that connects them besides the fact that they're all about the Seder? Is there a point that they make together? Ari? Okay.
The eating, you know, you want to keep an appetite for accentuate the theme of matzah, reclining also Erud. And the four cups of wine also serve to emphasize the symbolism of freedom and poverty and slavery that the Jews had in Egypt.
Okay, so very well taken. That's definitely a very relevant perspective. That it seems like all of these dinim, which seem to come from three different places, Dalet Kosos should be one thing, Haseba should be another thing, and this issue of eating on Erev Pesach should be yet another thing. Yet they all share in common, perhaps, that they're all there to emphasize one common thing. And that one common aspect clearly connects to matzah. So what we see is that our Mishnah is making a statement about the role of matzah. And how exactly to understand that statement, that's something that we're going to hopefully get a little more perspective about. So the first din is telling us about Erev Pesach. Now, Erev Pesach is an intense day. It's going to be especially interesting this year, as we'll see, related to this sugya as well, because Erev Pesach Shachalios B'Shabbos has some interesting halachos. But in general, Erev Pesach is an intense day. And there are halachic obligations and prohibitions that impact Erev Pesach. Right, so in fact, it's actually the case that it has its own halachic status, that the 14th of Nisan really actually is Pesach, really technically Chag HaPesach, and what starts at the 15th of Nisan is actually Chag HaMatzos, has a different status to it. And that's also something that we'll see. So the day of Chag HaPesach, the day in which the Korban Pesach is prepared, is significant for a number of halachos. So what halachos apply on Erev Pesach specifically? So we have this issue of eating in general. We have a more focused prohibition on eating matzah, as Tosus introduces us to here in the name of Yerushalmi. See the Yerushalmi inside is also a good idea. And there's also a concept, even though it's applied in a very complex way, of an Isser Malacha on Erev Pesach, as the earlier Prakim, and Daf Yomi recently, if you're holding there, has taken up as a subject. So there's a lot of activity, or lack of activity, connected with the 14th of Nisan as well. And here, the Mishnah tells us that we shouldn't eat too much in the afternoon of Erev Chag HaMatzot. So why is that the case? So what's the nature of that concept? Why shouldn't we eat too much in the afternoon of the 14th of Nisan? Right, what reasons do we have? Hi, Sam.
I guess one of them is to be hungry for matzah.
Okay, so one reason is to be hungry for matzah. So who says that? Well, so on the page, it seems like... Right, so on the page we have Rashi and the Rashbam, a grandfather-grandson team, chiming in on this point, saying pretty much identical language, for the most part, where they tell us that Kidei Shiyofo Matzah Shal Mitzvah L'Teyavon, that's the language of Rashi, and... why is that important? Why do we care about Teyavon? Yeah, will you use your hand? So Rashi here says Hidr Mitzvah. So that's an interesting point. Is that a intuitively obvious idea that there's a Hidr Mitzvah here? Is there a Chiddush in this concept? What would you say? That is something that strikes you as so clearly the case that this is an example of Hidr Mitzvah? That's very lady. Okay, so that's the point is well taken. And that's a major discussion. If you learn this sugya of Hidr Mitzvah, which is a Shas sugya, but most prominently related in the sugya in the Sefer Shabbos, and Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel. Sorry? Yeah, for sure in Sukkah. It's a major theme in Sukkah as well. Sukkah has its own details, because it's also a pasuk in the context of, right, so the extent to which it is the same is an interesting discussion itself. But we have in general Din B'chol Torah Kula of Hidr Mitzvah. It's a pasuk that we say every morning in Az Yashir. In the Parashas B'Shalach, we'll read next week's Parasha. Zeh Keli V'Anvehu. So, we say, this is my God, and I will Anvehu. What does Anvehu mean? That's the hard word to translate. Herman Wouk, Olav Shalom, who teach here, a novelist, so he wrote a book about his faith called This Is My God. He left out the hard word of the pasuk. So, Zeh Keli V'Anvehu. What does Anvehu mean? So, according to one opinion in the Gemara, he has a couple of opinions over there and elsewhere, but according to one opinion,
I will glorify
God. So how will I glorify God? How is that something that's within our control? It's not the fun of the mitzvos. Do mitzvos in a beautiful way. And that introduces the concept of hidr mitzvah. But the examples, as Levi was indicating, what are the examples in the Gemara there? They're all objects. Lulav na'a, Sefertorah na'a, Tzitzis na'a. That you should have beautiful mitzvah items. So the idea that you could have a concept of hidr in how you do something is not necessarily obvious from the Gemara. Now, it may be that that's how Rishonim understand it, and that's the whole discussion, but one of the first makoros that gets pulled into that discussion when talking about is hidr mitzvah only object-based, or is it something that could refer to actions as well? So this Rashi and this Rashbam are brought into that discussion very early on. So this is considered to be a chiddush. Like, this is not at all an obvious point that the concept of hidr mitzvah is relevant to. There are a few other makoros that may also make that point. Just to give a little background about that topic, so for example, the Tosfos and the Zachas Brachos, which isn't really followed by halacha, probably, but it sounds like even though you can recite a bracha through Shemaya Ka'one, if you're listening to somebody else's bracha, but it's better to do it on your own. That it's some type of hither, it sounds like, to make a bracha on your own, rather than listening to somebody else's bracha. So that may also be another example of hiddur in an action. And there are a few other possible examples also. It could be the Rambam. Maybe it's understood that way, a different psakim of the Rambam that seem to indicate that the Rambam sees hiddur as a question of how you do something rather than a beautiful object. And that may even be the primary way the Rambam understands it. So it's not totally our sugya today, just giving you a little bit of background in that, but that is a whole discussion. Now, what do you do with the Gemara if you believe that it's about how you do things? So what do you do with the Gemara that lists objects? So it could be that Gemara could be understood a little differently, and that it's also really talking about, so for example, when it says Sefer Torah Noah, then maybe it means and it's about how you write the Sefer Torah, and that there are different interpretations that have been brought to that Gemara that allow for such a thing. Zach, did you have your hand up before?
Yeah, I think it could maybe be qualifying the object, because our perception of the object is something more beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Because that when we're hungry, the food is more appetizing, food is more appealing.
Uh-huh.
So in that sense, the object does become more...
We're more excited about the matzah.
Yeah.
Yeah, now that's definitely a possibility here, right? The idea that hither is about how we relate to it, and we'll relate to it with more anticipation if we're hungry. That's definitely an idea to think about, that that might be part of the issue here. Now, if that's true, it's a different kind of concept. Right? So it adds a different level. So it could be this hitter in action, and that's one type of hitter. It could be the hitter in objects, or it could be there is subjective hitter in how we perceive objects, and that if we get more excited about matzah, I know for me personally it's a challenge to get excited about matzah, and so the prohibition of matzah is just Erev Pesach, and many have a minig to not have matzah a month before Pesach. I always joke that my minig is not to have matzah 11 and a half months before Pesach. You need a big runway in order to really get excited about the taste of matzah. But the idea that maybe you'll come to anticipate it more, and therefore you'll see it as more beautiful, is interesting. Now, it would still be a chiddush, because presumably the object hiddur mitzvah is more about presenting a impressive impression to other people. That you show that you take mitzvah seriously, and we show that this is something that we value, especially in a world which is a materialistic world, and all other religions have items that are very aesthetically appealing and have buildings that are very imposing. So therefore, it's important that we show that we have the same kind of enthusiasm and reverence to our mitzvah items. So to say this based on our perception would be a chiddush, but maybe it's still true. Maybe that's indeed the case. It was, that point was just...
It definitely goes right now. It's a little bit tight, I would think, in terms of what we would want. And down the hall for now, and then we could try to coordinate to make sure whether it's almost not in the military.
Okay, well, so today we're ready, almost, but maybe for the future date we'll...
Okay,
Shkai, thank you.
Good.
Very good to see you.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Mikminsky, for all the wonderful work you do for us in these very challenging times.
Okay.
Very much appreciated. So, this idea, it could be true, but it would be a chiddush. It's definitely something that's not an obvious point. Now, it happens to be that there could be different kinds of hiddur, and this source specifically was brought into a debate between the great Tzachas Rav Rebbe, the Avnei Nezer, and his student, the Chalkas Yoav. And it appears in a few places. The Avnei Nezer has a tshuva, it's Taf Lamed Gimel, in Or HaChaim, which he wrote to his student, the Chalkas Yoav. And the Chalkas Yoav also quotes a letter from him, from his Rebbe, Avnei Nezer, in the introduction to his Sefer, Tshuva Chalkas Yoav. So going back about 150 years ago, there was this exchange between the Avnei Nezer and the Chalkas Yoav. And they discussed the question of whether hiddur has to be visible to other people, or could there be a hiddur that is not exposed and that is hidden. So that was a question in general. And it's an issue that comes up in other Rishonim elsewhere, that there are Yishonim who maintain that Heder Mitzvah, by definition, has to be publicly visible, or else it's not, there's no point in it. So, for example, this comes up in Hilchos Sefer Torah and Tefillin, that when it comes to a Sefer Torah, so we know there is a halacha, that the writing has to be nice, and has to be underlined, has to be assertive, so that the writing is nice. And, in fact, some Sofer writes that that's the literal translation, Zek, Kelev, Yaveh, especially God's name in a Sefer Torah has to be written nice. That's the literal adornment of God's name in the most direct sense, but the Sefer Torah overall has to be beautiful writing. So there was discussion in Rishonim, what about the Parshiyos of Tefillin? Do they have the same requirements of Hiddur? So why not? So the difference would be that the Parshiyos of Tefillin are rolled up and concealed, so nobody sees them. So maybe you wouldn't have the same standard of Hiddur. Maybe you wouldn't have the same value of Hiddur to a situation like that. So that was an issue in the Rishonim. So the Chalkis Yov and the Avi Nezer had a back and forth about this. And one of the points that was brought up, so Levi mentioned the Sukkah. So in the context of Sukkah, Heder comes up a few places. But one of the issues is Eget, that the Lulav has to have a binding, or at least the Chachila has to be bound together, which is also an interesting detail that it may only be the Chachila. But if it's got something tying them together, so usually people aren't going to see that. Usually that will be hidden under your hand. So the Chalkis Yov says, okay, there you have it. You could have a Hiddur that is not something people are looking at. That is basically a personal Hiddur. Only you know about it, probably. So the Avi Nezer said, no, that's not a good proof. Because that's a whole different kind of Hiddur. To say that a Lulav needs an Eged, why is that a Hiddur? It's a Hiddur because it goes to the lakicha, that when you fulfill the mitzvah of taking the lulav, so you should take it in a way that is all integrated, and it's all brought together as one unit. So the eged helps you to take it in an effective way. So it's a hiddur in that sense. So he says it's a different kind of hiddur. So if you want to have beautiful parshiyos in your tefillin that are not going to be seen, it's a good question whether that makes sense. But when we say that lulav tzarech eged, and that is because of hiddur, we don't mean because it'll make it look nicer. It means because the lakicha will be a more effective lakicha because it's tied together. And in making that point, he says, what is that like? He says, that is what you see in the beginning of Arvei Pesachim. So when the Gemara there talks about not eating on Erev Pesach so that you'll have an appetite like Rashi and the Rashbam say, and call that Hiddur Mitzvah, because there the Mitzvah is eating. And you'll have a more intense eating if you have an appetite. So therefore, the appetite increases the eating, just like the Eged increases the Lekicha. So there's a parallel there, but it's a different kind of Hiddur. It's not necessarily what we would talk about when we refer to beautiful tefillin, or the like. You want to have a comment? Yes, ma'am? It's a fair name. But yeah, basically that it goes to the function of the mitzvah, that the mitzvah should happen in a more effective way. That's the kind of hitter. Now, in general, terminology is a good question how much it matters, because you know, there are some who go through some of these points and they say, like, let's say this Rashi and Rashbam, that you might just call that something else. You might call that a mitzvah min hamuvchar. To do a mitzvah in a perfect way is presumably also something related to a hiddur. And if you don't want to call it hiddur mitzvah, then maybe it's got a different term which essentially goes to the same point. Now, does it go to the same point? It's also a question of what hiddur mitzvah is about. Is hiddur mitzvah about impressing people? Or is Hiddur Mitzvah essentially about impressing God, about showing that you are committed to a mitzvah in an enthusiastic way? So we saw in the first parak, for example, we saw the sugya of the reason matim in the mitzvot, the idea that we do mitzvot at the earliest opportunity, and we try to display enthusiasm. And we mentioned there that there were a couple of possibilities. Is Rizus because you want to show enthusiasm, or is there for some other reason? And there is a combination of reasons. So too, with Hidr Mitzvah itself, if you ask that question, is Hidr just one more way of expressing enthusiasm? Or is Hidr about impressing people, in which case it's hard to see how being ravenous when you eat matzah is going to impress people as much as you might think. But so that question of whether that concept of Hidr is applicable here or is it a different Hidr is itself interesting. Hi.
So, you know, you don't have to actually eat on Erev Pesach, but you could enter.
Okay, so that's an important question on a couple of levels. So first of all, it's important practically, because we need to know what are the parameters of this din, and what exactly, what kind of a din is it to begin with, and is it absolute, is it subjective, is it lechachila, is it an iser, or is it something in between? So it's an important question for that reason. But also, on a broader level, the whole question of hidr by any mitzvah and how does it relate to the mitzvah being fulfilled or not is a tricky question, because on the surface, logically, it would sound like it's not ma'akev, because that's what the word means, right? A hidr mitzvah means icing on the cake. It means enhancement. So by definition, if it was ma'akev, the mitzvah couldn't happen without it, then why are we calling it a hidr? It's just a detail of the mitzvah. So a hidr by its very nature has to be something that's not ma'akev. But on the other hand, if we call it a chiyuv, so what does that mean? And one of the major sources that gets pulled into that debate is the Eged discussion, because Lula of Tzarech Eged, the Gemara says that that is because of Zekei Levan Vehu. And yet, it's not ma'akev. If you don't have an Eged for your Lula, you're still Yotzer. So that's the whole discussion. What does that say about things? The Ritva, it's a little bit of a discussion how to understand this word, for the Ritva in the first parak of Psachim and after Aleph, the Ritva quotes from there that you see that Hidr Mitzvah must not be a Din Min HaTorah, because the assumption is, which not all Rishonim agree with, but the assumption is that all Din Min HaTorah are either all or nothing. They're a Ma'akev or they're not there in the first place. So to have a Din Min HaTorah that is L'chachila, some Rishonim felt doesn't exist. So if Hidr Mitzvah is really only L'chachila, it must not be a Din Min HaTorah. Aye, it's a Pasuk. So a Pasuk maybe is a Netznachta. The Pasuk has a more limited application. Jesse, did you have a question before? So if that, well, we don't know exactly what the message of Hidr Mitzvah is, but maybe that's what it's saying, that I want to, well, the purpose is to bring glory to God. If the literal language of the Pasuk is Zekeli V'Andreyu, I will glorify God. So how do I glorify God? So I make people impressed by Him. So I show that I'm so enthusiastic about what He asked me to do. So I build a shul that's very impressive. I have a Sefer Torah that people look at and they say, wow. And especially, again, living in a materialistic world where that's what everyone works from and what other religions have also assumed is a necessity. So if we're going to have big shuls, then we're going to have shuls that are impressive. So, again, not necessarily a complex point how much you should spend on having a big shul to a point to help us suck into other detail and the range for how much to invest in a hidr is its own sugya. But to at least to a certain degree, that apparently evoking people's awe to some degree, making people impressed, might be the intent of Zekeli V'Andreyu. Now others will say it's not. Zach, how are you? Yes, sir.
If he cares about like the way he looks to other people, one of their looks kind of gross if you had just been like not eating all day and like I remember with Devon
yeah. Yeah, as we said before, kind of jokingly, but it is to get some extent true, that whether it's gross or not is a little bit subjective, but that's what we were alluding to before. But at best, it's not impressing anyone else. Right? No one else is going to see, oh my gosh, this mitzvah is amazing because you're eating it with enthusiasm. So if this Rashi and Rashbam are talking about the standard hidr mitzvah, then that's going to push us away from that interpretation. Then it doesn't seem to be about impressing other people. So to say that it's about hidr mitzvah is going to be hard to fit into that model. unless you say that it's a, there are different details of hiddur mitzvah, like the Apanezer was saying in the tshuva, that it's not all the same, and that there's a hiddur mitzvah in the object, that's one thing, and there's also hiddur in how we do things, and maybe it's a different category, but you're certainly correct that at best, whether it's gross or not, but at best you're not going to impress people with how starving you are when you wolf down the matzah. It's not going to, it's not necessarily going to, it's not a good first date kind of thing. It's to invite somebody to stay there and so that's a clear unusual context to begin with. But okay, so that's one angle that needs to be figured out to say that this is a concept of hiddur mitzvah is at a minimum it's a chiddush. At a minimum it's not obvious, and that's telling us something that we wouldn't have necessarily have thought without this. And the background, if you go to the sugya of hiddur mitzvah, you see that this Rashbam and this Rashi get put in pretty early because it is something that is not necessarily so obvious. However, it's also maybe not obvious for another reason. Now, is there another possibility as to why we have the din of not eating on Erev Pesach? Sam?
Don't forget Pesach.
Okay, but how you could you get involved in the meal, and that will... How does that connect?
Why can't you?
Yeah, how... So like in general, we sometimes have a prohibition of eating before a mitzvah.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. The problem is, practically speaking, when it comes to Korban Pesach, we have a requirement to eat other things. Even though it's true that by many mitzvahs we have such a concept, it's hard to apply in that sense to Korban Pesach. But there is another issue which the Gemara seems to say. We have a chance to see that in the Korban Pesach. Okay, right, so that seems to be the explicit Gemara on Daf Kuzayin. It's also what the Ran, for example, brings here. So if you saw the Ran on the Mishnah, so the Ran has his interpretation, which is based on the Gemara on Daf Kuzayin. And also, I didn't put this on the list because it's harder to find, but I can send around a copy tomorrow. It's worth seeing inside. If you have a Rabbeinu David on Pesachim, it's hard to find online or elsewhere, but the Sefer Rabbeinu David, the Talmud of the Ramban, he always has fascinating things to say. So he, maybe I'll send around a picture of it tomorrow, so he has a comment on the Mishnah also where he says, like the Ran, but more expansively. He has a lot more to add to it. But the Ran says, which seems to really be indicated by the Gemara and Kozayin in the days, that the issue is achila gasa, that we are concerned that maybe you won't be able to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah, or maybe I'm really putting words in his mouth, that somehow you'll be at a stage where you can't really eat comfortably because you're so satiated from before. And that will interfere with the mitzvah of matzah. So what exactly is the nature of that concern? It's something that we have to figure out. On the surface, it sounds like, and this is how the Rebbeinu David and also the Rambam read it, especially Rebbeinu David, that it's just about the mitzvah, that you have a mitzvah to fulfill, and if you've had a achila gasa, if you're full from before, so then you're not going to be able to fill the mitzvah because the assumption seems to be that achila gasa lav shmei achila, that achila that happens when you don't have an appetite is not called a halachic achila, and therefore you're going to take yourself out of the running for this mitzvah. So is that a concern? Have to figure that out. Is that really what we're worried about? Are we worried that you're going to be so full that it's not going to even count as an achila, so the mitzvah will not be accomplished? So Tosfos, if you had a chance to see, Tosfos on Kuf Zayin Amud Beis notes that in order to make other sources work, you have to assume that there are different levels of achila gasa. And they're not all the same. And this is something that impacts halacha in terms of avera. So if somebody eats something that's prohibited, and it's a eating of achila gasa, so then it seems like you're pater from that avera. You're pater for an onish for that avera, at least according to most. So it's a little bit of a discussion, but let's work off the assumption that you're pater for an onish if you eat something prohibited as achila gasa. So is that the concern, that you're going to be on that level of disconnect? So Tosfos makes the distinction that there is a achila gasa where just you are disgusted by the thought of eating. You are so full you cannot imagine eating anything else. Or there is another level of achila gasa where it's not so much that you can't eat, you're going to just explode if you have anything else to eat, but you're just simply not going to enjoy what you're eating because you've had enough already. And you're not going to come with excitement towards this food because of your level of satiety. So that's an important distinction to keep in mind, because what is our worry here? Are we worried about the issue that it's you're mamish not going to be able to eat, and it's if it was a matter of isser, you would be pater, and that's what kind of eating we're talking about for the matzah, and that's what we're afraid of? Or is it something of a lesser concern? That no, we don't think that's so likely, but it's that even if we reduce the excitement that you're going to have, it's going to create a problem. Now, that distinction is also important because on the surface, it seems like Rashi and the Rashbam, in addition to the Chiddush of applying Hidur Mitzvah to this case, but they seem to be against the Gemara, because the Gemara brings up this concern of Achila Gasa. So why should they not invoke that? So if you look, for example, in the Rashash in the back of the Gemara, the Rashash poses this question that they seem to be against the way the Gemara has it. So that's something that may need us to distinguish between different levels of achila gasa. Now, we're going to have to continue this tomorrow because we're going to be out of time in a minute. I just want to also recap a little bit. But we are hopefully setting up a few questions here that we have to try to figure out what exactly is the nature of this din, what it's supposed to accomplish. And also, how does that fit into the larger scheme of what the message of the Mishnah is? And in addition, so as Ilan brought up the question, so what exactly is the status of this whole din of not eating on Erev Pesach? Is it a Isser? Is it a Lechatchila? Is it subjective? So that's something we for sure have to clarify. But just categorically, there's something to think about here. Because if we treat this as, let's say, an isser, as a prohibition, so is it a gzera? Is that what we're talking about? So if it's a gzera, like we find in general that you have rabbinic prohibitions that are there to protect the Torah, like we discussed a lot last month and always, because it's a meta-Torah topic, there would be something unusual about saying there's a gzera here. I don't know if anyone can sense what might be unusual about calling this a gezeira. All right. Okay, so actually you can come at it from two directions, and they actually bounce off each other. So one is, if this is a hither, we want to protect your hither, like if you want to say, like Rashi and the Rashbam, that we're not worried necessarily that you're going to miss the mitzvah, but we want it to be the best thing as possible, and we're going to enact a gezeira in order to protect that. Do you ever see anywhere a gezeira for a hider? Okay, so that's something we have to figure out then, is how exactly are we categorizing that. Maybe that's true. But even if you want to say that, no, it's not hider we're worried about, but we're worried about the mitzvah itself, that maybe we're taking a concern of achila gasa and the more extreme kind of achila gasa that the mitzvah itself is threatened, still it would be a chiddush. Because, right?
The Mishnah doesn't say asher, it says one should not eat.
Okay, so that's also something we have to try to figure out. How absolute is the language and how much can we get from the language? It's true. But also just categorically, so we often assume, really based on a comment of the Prima Gaudim in one of his introductions, that we don't make, Chazal didn't make gezeros for positive mitzvahs. That they made gezeros for hisurim. And it's based on the idea of the pasuk in Parshas Acharmos, that the Gemara quotes in Yevamos, Gushmartem es mishmarti, you should protect my mishmerah. So the Gemara says there in the second parak of Yevamos, assume mishmeres and mishmarti. You should make a safeguard for my mishmeres. So mishmeres, hishomer, the Gemara says, is one of the languages the Torah uses for a prohibition, for a law. Hishomer, don't do this. So the Prima Gaudim and others assume that in general, Chazal made gezeros to protect Yisuru. They didn't make gezeros to protect positive mitzvahs. It gets into a whole discussion why the first Mishnah in Shas, the first Mishnah in Brachos, talks about a potential gezeira for Kriyashma. Then you should say Kriyashma before Chasot. The question whether we actually assume there is such a gezeira, that might be the issue. Or if not, maybe Kriyashma is special because it's our basic Namuna declaration. But the idea of a gezeira for a losa, for an asay, is unusual. The Prima Gaudim says not something that we have. So we need to figure out what exactly is this gezeira doing, if that's the case. Now it happens to be Rav Kook, and the comments that are collected in the Sefer Tov Roi, so Rav Kook says, I don't think the Prima Gaudim is right. There's no reason to make such a distinction, and that the Torah gives the power to Chazal to make gezeiras, and they can do it whatever they think is necessary for aseis or los aseis, and he says, this is the proof. Here you have it. This Mishnah is telling us about a gezeira for masa, so you see that gezeiras are not limited just to mitzvah sase, and you can have a gezeira by a mitzvah sase as well. But even if you accept the position there against the Prima Gaudim, it's still interesting, it's still certainly unusual. So it's either a big chiddush or it's a little chiddush, but it's definitely unusual, the idea of a gezeira for a positive mitzvah, if that's what we're talking about here, is itself interesting. So we need to figure all of this out tomorrow and see how exactly does this connect to the rest of Mishnah, how does it actually connect us also to the first parak, and how does it connect us to our parsha in ways that we may not necessarily anticipate that will synergize us right into Synergy Heaven on Thursday. So there's a lot that hopefully will come together, but just to quickly recap what we spoke about. So we saw the questions of what exactly is the connection between all these points in the Mishnah, in addition to the fact that they're all about the Seder, but is there a stronger connection? As I pointed out, they probably have something specifically targeted at Matzah, and we'll have to see how that plays out. We saw that the first din of not eating on Erev Pesach is something we need to understand why it's there for. Rashi and the Rashbam say, so you should have Lutei Ovon. So it's a hidr mitzvah. We saw that that was a chiddush because hidr mitzvah in the Gemara sounds like it's talking about objects of being beautiful, not necessarily about how you do things, even though many Rishonim might acknowledge such a possibility, and that was the whole discussion. And we saw the machlokas between the Chalkes Yoav and the Avnei Nezer about hidr that's not visible, and the Avnei Nezer said it's only when you have something that's not about the object. The objects should be visible if they're going to be mahudr, but actions also have the concept of hidr. And in the context of lulav, you find that by holding it, that the egget is there to make it a more effective lekicha. So he says it's the same kind of thing as you see here, that the more effective afila is done with an appetite, and that's what this Mishnah is getting at. So one question of hither by an action is itself interesting, but not all Rishonim agree that's even what we're talking about, and it sounds like the Gemara doesn't think that's what we're talking about, because there's Iran and the Mein HaDavid point to that the Gemara seems to say the issue is Achila Gasa, and we need to figure out a few things. So what kind of Achila Gasa are we afraid of? Are we afraid of literally losing the whole mitzvah because it's impossible for you to eat, you're so full? Or is it something which is of a lesser concern than that? And we need to figure out why does Rashi and the Rashbam veer away from that? And also, why is it that we seem to have a gezeira here on a mitzvah tasei? Is it a gezeira or is it something else? But if it's a gezeira on hidr, that's especially interesting because you think hidr the whole discussion like we saw about whether it's ma'akiv or not, but to say that it requires a gzeira to protect the hither, that would certainly be unusual. But even if you say that we're literally concerned about the mitzvah itself, that's still surprising, because why would I have a gzeira at a positive mitzvah if the general assumption is that we don't? Of course, maybe it's not the general assumption, this is the proof, but otherwise it's either interesting or big kiddush, and we need to figure that out as well. And another point that we're going to also try to bring out tomorrow and pay specific attention to this is, what is the relationship between this Erev Pesach and Erev Shabbos and Yantif, where the Gemara has a machlokus about this. So to what extent is it overlap? Is it different? Is it completely different? That's also something that we'll have to figure out. Okay, so God willing, we'll have to see as much as we can about that tomorrow. So tomorrow will be on Zoom, but again, Wednesdays will probably soon transfer, and give us some time to find a different room. And wish everyone a wonderful, safe, and healthy day. It should be only good things. And I look forward to seeing you through one venue or another tomorrow. Yeah, I should go.